Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Bipartisan opposition to fracking energizes a big rally at the Florida Capitol.
You know, I'm a Republican. I might be the only Republican you've ever clapped for. But I'm proud of that, and I am truly thankful for your hard work. We've got to get this bill heard.
Also tonight, supporters of religious liberty were worried about a different kind of ecosystem today.
And many of the people of faith do feel like there's been a chilling effect and almost a sterilization of the environment.
We'll also get the latest on legislation about guns, medical marijuana, child abuse reporting, gambling, and the state's first all-charter school district. I'm Tom Flanagan. On this third day of the third week of the 2017 Florida lawmaking session, welcome to Capitol Report. Environmental activists flooded the Capitol today to support a handful of bills and oppose others, but as Jim Ash reports, one of their biggest goals is a statewide ban on hydraulic fracturing.
Environmental rallies at the Florida Capitol are standard fare. By now, fracking opponents are expert at waving signs and shouting slogans. And it's certainly not uncommon for Democratic lawmakers to show up and urge them on. But 2017 is different. On Wednesday, activists cheered as Republican Senator Dana Young of Tampa grabbed a microphone on the Capitol's western steps.
Thank you so much. Your enthusiasm is definitely catching. And I want to commend you for being here today and making your voices heard. And I want to thank you personally for your support of our bill to ban fracking in the state of Florida.
Young is considered a big prize for environmentalists because she was elected to the Senate after serving as majority leader in an ultra-conservative House. Young is championing the hydraulic fracturing ban this year after an opponent labeled her anti-environment. At the rally, Young threw an arm around the shoulders of Democratic Senator Gary Farmer of Fort Lauderdale and stressed that the environment is not a partisan issue.
You know, I'm a Republican. I might be the only Republican you've ever clapped for. But I'm proud of that, and I am truly thankful for your hard work. We've got to get this bill heard.
Young's bill is already moving in the Senate after winning unanimous approval in its first committee stop. By getting the bill heard, Young was referring to the House, where companion legislation is bottled up. But that's not to say all House Republicans oppose the ban. The House companion is sponsored by a Republican, and Republican Representative Heather Fitzenhagen of Fort Myers is a co-sponsor.
The science is irrefutable. There is nothing, nothing that is positive about fracking in Florida.
Yes.
Florida does not need fracking. We don't have the geology that can even withstand fracking.
House Majority Leader Ray Rodriguez, also of Fort Myers, is a principal roadblock. Rodriguez recently said he would consider a moratorium or a compromise that respected property rights. But Young and others say they won't budge. Rodriguez remains bitter over the Senate's rejection last year of his own fracking legislation. Backed by the industry, it called for a moratorium and studies that would be followed by a tightly controlled permitting program. Jake Kramer, an attorney for Collier Resources in Southwest Florida, recently warned the Senate panel they were courting lawsuits.
Large landowners won't have a choice. They'll be forced to bring dozens of high-profile and expensive takings lawsuits against the state. They'll do this because the bill will take their property rights as soon as it becomes law.
Hydraulic fracturing has been blamed for everything from flaming tap water to minor earthquakes. but industry scientists insist it can be done safely, even in Florida's porous limestone bedrock. But activists like Orlando High School teacher Gretchen Robinson aren't convinced. Robinson took time from her spring break to drive to Tallahassee to support the ban. She doesn't understand the House opposition.
It baffles me. I think these House members need to vote as Floridians, not as Republicans. The time for voting along party lines against the community's interest, it's passed, really.
After all, Robinson says, pollution knows no political or geographic boundaries.
We need to remember that we all live here. Democrats, Republicans, independents, people who really have no politics, we all live here.
For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Florida lawmakers are looking at legislation that would allow more religious expression in public schools. Bill sponsors say not allowing students and school employees to talk about their religion violates the First Amendment. But critics say these bills force Christian beliefs on others. More on the story from Sarah Mueller.
Religious freedom laws have popped up before in Florida. The state approved a religious freedom law modeled after the one Congress approved. But lately, more states have been considering religious belief legislation related to gay marriage issues. Indiana, Mississippi, and Georgia all passed similar laws in 2015, protecting company employees who deny goods and services to same-sex couples based on employees' religious objections. Last year, it was Florida's turn. The state approved legislation blocking clergy from being sued if they decline to marry people against their religious beliefs. Carlos Guillermo Smith of Equality Florida said at the time the pastor protection bill was insulting to LGBT people.
We don't support this bill in its current form. We removed our opposition because the sponsors worked with us to make these clarifications and to agree that for the very least this session, we were not going to expand this bill beyond its current scope to hurt LGBT families. Next session, I think all bets are off.
The religious liberties legislation doesn't mention issues relating to same-sex rights, but Equality Florida still opposes the bills sponsored by Democratic Representative Kim Daniels and Republican Senator Dennis Baxley. The group says it opens the door to discrimination against religious minorities, LGBTQ people, and non-religious people. Kara Gross of ACLU of Florida says the legislation is unnecessary because the Constitution already protects religious freedom.
These bills are about sanctioning discrimination under the guise of protecting religious expression, and they're not about protecting discrimination based on religion.
Both Senator Baxley and Representative Daniels' legislation would allow public school students to wear religious symbols, talk about their religious beliefs, and organize religious groups and clubs before, during, and after school. Students would also be free to express religious views in written and oral assignments without being treated differently. Baxley, who used to lead the Christian Coalition of Florida, says taking religion out of schools is a violation of the First Amendment. He believes the separation of church and state is preventing students and school employees from practicing their faith. And he argues his proposal applies to all religions, including faiths who follow Sharia law, a type of Islamic law based on religious beliefs.
Quite frankly, I think individual students need the advent of this expression in our society. And many of the people of faith do feel like there's been a chilling effect and almost a sterilization of the environment.
But his legislation has received some pushback from fellow senators. Democratic Senator Jeff Clemons questions whether there is a chilling effect.
If you're looking for a justification for this bill, I would like to know what a good example of that chilling effect would be.
But Senator Baxley declined to provide specifics, saying he didn't want to focus on any one incident. Kara Gross of ACLU of Florida says these religious freedom laws come at a time when Pew Research Center reports people in the U.S. are becoming less religious. But Pam Olson of the Family Prayer Network says religious liberties are under attack. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sarah Mueller.
Still to come on Capitol Report, a top Republican lawmaker is taking a strong stance against gun bills this session, but a plan to check guns at the courthouse door is still alive.
So I'm saying if you have a license to carry, you can walk to the courthouse, you surrender your firearm to law enforcement, you go about your business, on the way out, you get your firearm back, and you leave.
Implementing the Medical Marijuana Amendment 2 is raising a number of questions at the Capitol, like how open the market should be, but one state lawmaker wants to retain current controls.
Senators, this is not the selling of lawnmowers or office supplies.
A grand experiment. Florida's first ever all-charter school district is about to get underway.
Well, this will be a serious collaborative partnership where we are all working together for a common goal.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org.
State lawmakers are advancing a plan to allow gun owners to check their weapons at the courthouse door. The bill's moving forward even as top politicians are taking a stand against gun expansion, as we hear from Kate Payne.
One of the most powerful lawmakers in the Florida Capitol is clear that any gun bills must go through her office first.
I do not support having guns on campus. I do not support having guns in airports. I don't support having guns in school zones. I don't support those things.
But Miami Republican Senator Anna Terre Flores could be making an exception for a courthouse gun bill. Sarasota Republican Senator Greg Stube wants licensed gun owners to be able to check their weapons at the door when they go to court.
I can't tell you how many lawyers I've had in my district that have told me that they've had their lives threatened, that they have very contentious cases, and they have a concealed carry permit, and they carry all the time, and they can't carry from their car to the courthouse because they can't carry in the courthouse.
Currently, Stube says gun owners are forced to leave their weapons in a car or at home.
They're a target. And when they're leaving the courthouse, because they know that you can't carry in the courthouse, they're also a target. So I'm saying if you have a license to carry, you can walk to the courthouse, you surrender your firearm to law enforcement, you go about your business, on the way out, you get your firearm back, and you leave.
Opponents say there just aren't enough courthouse attacks to warrant the bill. While the plan is meant to protect lawyers and victims, St. Petersburg Senator Daryl Roussan worries the bill could backfire.
Would you agree that there are persons approaching a courthouse or going there on matters that might be emotional to them, concerning to them, cause anxiety in them, and that encouraging a person to bring a weapon such as a knife or a gun even to the front door of a courthouse might be problematic?
Stube is pushing a suite of gun bills this session to allow licensed owners to carry on college campuses and at public meetings. But every other measure is stalled in the early stages of review, making the courthouse bill Stube's last best hope. And he says the measure is relatively narrow.
It would only be licensed permit holders. So if they were accused of a domestic violence injunction, they wouldn't have a license. If they had been accused or charged with a crime, they wouldn't have a license. We're only talking about licensed concealed carry permit holders.
As the Senate's second in command, Anna Terre Flores is making her views known, and she's ensuring lawmakers won't use the measure to expand gun access elsewhere.
If this bill becomes anything beyond this, I'm confident to have the commitment, not just of the chairman, but of every member of this committee and of every member of our chamber to say it's not going to go beyond to where we are now.
The courthouse gun bill must pass one last committee before it goes to the floor. And guess who's a member? Anna Terre Flores. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
State senators spent much of this afternoon kicking the tires on a medical marijuana proposal. Nick Evans reports the measure was backed by Fleming Island Republican Rob Bradley.
At this point, medical cannabis isn't a new issue in the Florida legislature. Republican lawmakers have brought forward proposals in each session since the state approved low-THC marijuana in 2014. Democrats have been introducing measures even longer. Still, the state Senate is handling the issue with kid gloves. few ideas have proven more divisive, and the differing perspectives can be seen in the number of proposals competing within the chamber.
Senate Bill 614 by Senator Brandis, Senate Bill 406 by Senator Bradley, Senate Bill 1388 by Senator Artilis, Senate Bill 1666 by Senator Brannon, Senate Bill 1758 by Senator Grimsley.
Wednesday, the Health Policy Committee attempted to compare and contrast the five bills with a particular focus on the one backed by Fleming Island Republican Rob Bradley. His idea is one of the more conservative proposals, maintaining much of the current framework for growing, distributing, and selling marijuana.
So where do we go from here? We need to build on the foundation that has been laid, learn from the mistakes we've made, which there are mistakes, and build on our successes, which, although it doesn't get reported a lot, there are successes.
Meanwhile, St. Petersburg Republican Senator Jeff Brandis wants to abandon that system and establish a more free market model. The authors of Amendment 2 are backing that proposal. But Bradley argues marijuana is medicine and it needs to be treated differently.
Senators, this is not the selling of lawnmowers or office supplies. In those cases, there should be unlimited markets free from government oversight.
Young believes each proposal offers interesting ideas, and she's aiming to braid them together before the measure passes through her committee. But that means settling a number of important questions. Some of them, like a 90-day patient-doctor relationship, are easy.
Right, and I think it's worth noting here that all of the bills do away, I believe all of them, do away with the 3-month waiting period that's in existing law.
Some, like the number of eligible growers, vary widely, but Bradley is ready to amend his original proposal.
You know, I do believe that 406 is too restrictive, based on the feedback I've received from many of my colleagues in terms of the number of licenses and the competition that would need to be created.
Others are relatively new. Fort Myers Republican Senator Elizabeth Benequisto raises the question of long-term visitors.
How would we deal with that? Because I know I'm not the only district in the state that has a snowbird population who might get ill while they're in town.
Senators raised a number of other significant questions as well, but answers will have to wait. The committee held no vote, and whatever changes they agree on will likely be discussed at the next hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
A Northwest Florida county may be the first in the panhandle to take over the Child Protective Investigative Services, normally done by the state's Child Welfare Agency. As Sasha Cordner reports, Walton County could join 6 other counties across the state under a bill starting to move in the legislature.
The chief role of Child Protective Investigators is to look into claims of child abuse and neglect. Those investigators are usually housed within the Florida Department of Children and Families. But some county sheriff's departments have already decided to take on that role themselves. That includes Broward, Hillsborough, Manatee, as well as Pasco, Pinellas, and Seminole counties. Now, Walton County Sheriff Mike Atkinson wants his county to be added to that list.
We're doing it because it is ultimately in the best interest of these children, and that's the driving factor.
Due to their law enforcement affiliation, child protective investigators working for the sheriffs often have better cooperation and respect from the community, not always afforded to DCF investigators. That's according to a report by the Office of Program Policy Analysis and Government Accountability, or OPAGA. In addition, the investigators are expected to have better resources, higher salaries, and are retained at a higher rate than those employed by the state. And Atkinson says assuming the child protective responsibilities will also make it easier for his sheriff's office to add additional investigators, which will help with caseloads.
It is tough, hard work. It's very difficult for the men and women that do that particular job, but we think by working together, we can provide a better service to the kids. And at the end of the day, that is what we're about. So I'm excited. That I think we're going to have some continuity, hopefully.
But to make that change, it still needs formal legislative approval. So Panama City Republican Senator George Gaynor is sponsoring a bill to make that happen.
We believe that the legislation will allow for quicker response and better outcomes because of the close proximity of the sheriff's personnel being coordinated under a single entity. This will allow for a more flexible investigation because of fewer administrative barriers. Walton County Sheriff Atkinson and DCF have been working for more than a year to develop a contract that will put in place performance standards and protocol. The final step is for the legislature to approve the transition in the law.
Before unanimously passing the Senate Children, Families, and Elder Affairs Committee Tuesday, Gaynor also changed the Senate bill so the Walton County Sheriff's Office would be eligible for federal funding for child protection services. Meanwhile, its House companion has not yet had a hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Three charter school companies expressed interest. Two fit the criteria. Only one submitted an application. This week, the Jefferson County School District became Florida's first charter school district. And as Lynn Hatter reports, the move got a round of support from the State Board of Education today.
The Jefferson School District has been under fire from the State Board of Education for the past 6 months. Wednesday marked a notable shift in tone, with State Education Commissioner Pam Stewart praising what she says is an historic move by district officials.
And I am so proud of them that they chose to put the students first. There were many things that were discussed, and many of them had to do with the adults. But in the end, the Jefferson County School Board decided to side with the students.
Jefferson School Board voted Tuesday night to allow Somerset Academy to run its schools. Actually, there's only one now. The state pushed Jefferson to close its dilapidated elementary school and merge all its kids into one facility. The consolidation and charter school conversion come after years of trouble for the district. Denzel Whitfield graduated from Jefferson High School in 2012 and recently received his bachelor's degree from Florida Atlantic University. He watched the district decline as he moved from grade to grade.
Well, when I was younger, you really couldn't tell those problems then. We had a great amount of students enrolled in Jefferson County then. Mm-hmm. And as the years transitioned, I started to notice a lot of my friends started moving to different schools. And I didn't understand at the time, but the parents knew that it was more so because of the academic reasons.
Jefferson has been labeled a failing school district for more than 15 years. It's seen enrollment shrink as students and families have left for schools in neighboring Georgia and Leon County, Florida. It's been in a financial crisis at least twice during this time and was recently put under state financial control temporarily. Superintendent Marianne Arbelu was elected in November to turn the district around. She initially opposed both the consolidation of Jefferson's two schools and the handing of the day-to-day duties to a charter. But after months of back and forth with the state, she's hoping the district can begin to move forward and that a new charter school, Somerset Academy, will lead to the district reversing years of declining enrollment.
There's no magic bullet. You know, this will be a serious collaborative partnership where we are all working together for a common goal. But I do believe in the success of this charter operation. And with that will come student growth. And the student growth is really going to require that we don't have a consolidated school system any longer, because it will just be a function of capacity.
There's a lot of fear and uncertainty about what the future will bring to Jefferson. The decisions were made under pressure from the state, and teachers, staff, and administrators are worried about whether they'll still have jobs. Becoming the state's first charter school district will not be easy. School board member Sandra Saunders says while she's feeling hopeful, not everyone in Jefferson feels the same way.
You got some on one side and some on the other. You still got that biased feeling, so.
Do you think that it's eventually going to
heal?
It will eventually heal, that people will eventually get around it?
Well, probably, because they have no choice. That's our only option.
The district is under a tight timeline. An agreement with Somerset has to be signed by early April. And once the school year ends, the process of merging two schools into one will begin. That's not including merging district and charter operations, hiring staff, and hashing out all the little details that make a district work. Students go back to school in August, and Jefferson has to be prepared to open its doors to them as the state's first charter school emerges. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, a gambling overhaul bill is moving forward in the Florida House, but the plan is facing pushback from stakeholders and the other legislative chamber. Regan McCarthy reports.
The House gambling bill doesn't do much to gain the favor of many of the usual stakeholders typically included in a state gaming measure. Several communities with paramutuals, for example, are hoping for the right to operate slot machines. While the Senate plan grants that ability, the House bill does not.
The bill also closes gaming loopholes and shuts down activities
that were never authorized or contemplated by the legislature.
That's bill sponsor St. Cloud Republican Representative Mike LaRosa. He's talking about games offered by some paramutuals that simulate gaming that's typically limited to casinos owned by the Seminole tribe. Some, like Boca Raton Democratic Representative Joseph Abruzzo, worry LaRosa's plan could hurt paramutual businesses. But LaRosa argues it's the best move for Florida.
I think right now, as it sits, they have a workable plan. Some maybe need to change a bit of their business model, and I understand things are changing. They're changing for all of us in business. Philosophically, I'm not a proponent for expanding gaming. And if we decided to give them more, we would be expanding gaming, which is why I think what we're offering today is fair.
The House plan also essentially extends the state's current gaming agreement with the Seminole Indian tribe for another 20 years. But Abruzzo questions how likely the tribe is to agree, especially considering a court case that could allow the tribe to continue offering bank card games, even though a provision in the current compact that allowed that has expired.
If the Seminole tribe wins in court without giving them other gaming options like roulette and craps, What benefit do they have into signing this existing compact where they may win in court and not have to pay us a single dollar?
And while some have reported the tribe is calling the House bill a non-starter, LaRosa says the tribe's willingness to negotiate indicates it's interested. The measure has the support of some lawmakers who argue the move will bring stability to the industry, at least for the next two decades. Others are less supportive, but hope there will be a chance to tweak the measure as it moves forward. Here's Monticello Republican Representative Halsey Bashirs.
I don't agree with half of what's in this, but I still like you, and you're a man's man, and I cannot wait to work on this with you in Commerce, but I'm going to vote it up today.
But Abruzzo says working on the bill through committee or pushing it through the process in order for the House and Senate to begin working out a compromise in what's called conferencing isn't the answer.
There's only two ways we're not going to be here, year after year after year. We have to have a true special session on gaming because it's that complex of an issue. It's that important to the state of Florida. We'll either change the, it changes communities. We need to have specifically focus on it to get something done, or the interested parties are going to have to take it in their own hands and send it right to the vote of the people.
Without those changes, Abruzzo says the legislature will have to start its discussions over once again next year. The House bill has one committee left to go. The Senate bill is ready for a floor hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Sarah Mueller, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And please join us each weeknight at this time throughout the 2017 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman, and Walker, a Florida law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman, and Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from Florida United Businesses Association. FUBA is a statewide trade association representing Florida businesses. FUBA also publishes The Advisor, a pocket-sized guide to the Florida legislature. More at fuba.org. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.